This is Maria Rizaris presenting New Voices, a program which interviews brand new writers from all walks of life, deep in the throes of their writing projects. I will interview them, get them to read a sample of their work, then get a total stranger to critique them. Welcome to episode 5 of New Voices, where we talk to someone who came to writing, as she puts it, kicking and screaming. All Carly Atwell wanted to do was to write a manual for people who, like her, were suffering chronic depression. But to make it come alive, really reach the people she thought would benefit, she had to make friends with those words on the page and spill out her own story. Sound simple? Not so much. It was, she describes, like self-inflicted torture. Over 100,000 words later, she had a fully immersive website, a series of guidebooks, which she then set out to turn to audiobooks, all based on her memoir-style narrative of alternative therapies. Critiquing her is a man who's very much a friend of the word, written, spoken, documentary-like, fiction, radio podcasting. Adam Norris can turn tricks in the writing world that novices can only dream of. He's been a Sydney theatre critic. He's interviewed hundreds of writers and luminaries from around the world. People like Peter Carey, Ben Elton, Kevin Rudd, Paul Kelly all roll off his tongue in normal conversation. Plus, he's the organiser for the 2021 Bellingen Writers Festival in June. What does he think of Kylie, a reluctant memoirist and self-help curator? Well, listen up. Episode 5, Series 2, New Voices, where Adam Norris critiques Kylie Atwell. Kylie Atwell, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Maria.
And I'm really glad that you're able to join us from Brisbane.
Beautiful sunny Queensland. Beautiful one day, perfect the next.
And I do believe, though, that your life hasn't always been perfect.
Correct. I've struggled with anxiety and depression my entire life.
As a result of your experiences with depression, you developed a website. And from the website emanated a workbook with the books, putting things in words. How did you find that process?
Maria, as you will recall, when I started out, I wanted to create a manual for people. I remember sending it off to you to read. In a very short space of time, you contacted me back and said, Kylie, no one will ever read this.
It's a horrible thing to say. I'm so sorry.
But it was true. And I remember being absolutely devastated because I knew that the information I was sharing was life-changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean no one will read it? I remember you saying to me, no, they're going to learn so much more if you tell your story. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be the face of it. I don't want anyone to know who I am. I just want to create literally a procedure manual. And, you know, you helped pull my story out of me, kicking and screaming.
I think when I said, no one's ever going to read this, Carly, we're sort of with the mission of, I want people to read this and they're not going to read it in this form.
And you were so right. And it was my reluctance to be seen because I'm such an introvert and I'm...
Tell me a little bit about that chemistry that happened when you started to write that website and the books that followed from your personal narrative.
Yeah, if anything, it probably allowed me to get really sharp on what it is I already knew.
So it does sharpen your brain.
It's one thing to have it all in your head, but if you've got to put it into a format that's going to make sense for people, that's a whole skill in itself. Yeah, I really needed to learn how to do that because obviously then, you know, from the website, you know, the writing process really helped me to be able to articulate what it is that I need to be able to teach people.
It's going to be interesting for our listeners that even for those who are, you know, sitting down wanting to write their memoir or whatever and they get blocked, you're saying... You can do this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also too, like I think when it comes to a memoir, a big part of it is about, you know, getting all of those experiences out onto the page. Like it's actually really cathartic.
Yeah. Just describe to me as a non-writer what that process was like for you.
So I find it difficult writing and is because I had a father that was a tyrant. You had to be perfect. Even in the process of writing, like it was like I had 10 people in my head telling me how to rewrite the sentence in 10 different ways. And to the point that every time I'd write something, it was like I had ants in my head and it would hurt. It would actually physically hurt. But in going through this process, it has started to free that up. I have people writing to me saying, oh my goodness, it feels like you're speaking to my soul. It feels like you're telling my story. So obviously that's quite encouraging and allows you to develop some sort of confidence and to keep going. The thing that is part of the essence of my workbook series is learning how to overcome those subconscious programs that prevented me. Yeah. I can actually write sentences now that don't take 2 days to write a paragraph.
When was it that you identified that you had depression?
That's a good question. I mean, I've felt melancholy since the time that I can remember.
So why didn't you just go to a therapist?
I'd been to counselling. I've psychotherapy, cognitive behavioural therapy. I'd read psychology books. Honestly, it just hadn't really helped. It kept me in my mind thinking about my problems and my issues. And I thought the solution lay in incorporating all the things that I thought would make me happy. I had a high-level position. I pretty much was a workaholic. Bought the house, had the flash car, the clothes, the friends, the this and the that, and got to the peak of my career at the age of 28. And I felt completely hollow and empty. I'd worked so hard to build this life and was absolutely devastated when I got to that point. Aside from the materialistic aspects, but that brought no satisfaction deep down. I'd get married to Prince Charming. Sort of my marriage wasn't working as well. I kept thinking, oh my goodness, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm the common denominator here of this failure. And then I just started exploring lots of personal development workshops and courses. And
you went on a huge exploratory journey.
Sort of anything that I could get my hands on that would tell me more about myself.
So the same kind of zest and determination that you lent to building your career, you then went and dove into every alternative therapy known to humankind, because there were things in there that I'd never heard of before.
Anything that sort of piqued a bit of curiosity, or someone would recommend something, again, just with that underlying purpose of I'm broken, what's wrong with me, how can I fix myself, and I'd hear about a new modality and then I'd be off. I really wasn't finding the answers either that I'd been looking for. So even though I'd spent all of this money, all of this time.
What did you hit on that turned things around?
A lot of people don't realize that there are key differences between passion and purpose. You know, passions are really the things that bring you a sense of joy and immense pleasure. I love working with my hands and I love knitting and I love woodworking and they make you feel emotionally buoyant. However, purpose, it still evokes a lot of emotion. Purpose actually involves serving others. They're very different, and you can have many, many passions, but you only have one true purpose.
So what is it now that you defined gives you joy?
For me, like when I actually see someone really getting one of the key teachings that I am imparting to them, and then I see them apply that to their life, like that just brings me incredible joy. You know, that just lights me up. I can talk about that for hours on end. You know, I want to, you know, share this information with people to genuinely change their life, so that they then have, you know, the same tools that allowed me to literally go from being chronically depressed to living every day with meaning and purpose. That what I'm really doing is more of a curatorial role in the area of self-transformations, identifying the key resources that certainly for, you know, that I've found most beneficial, arranging them in, I guess, a system that will allow people to walk through the process of identifying their purpose and then aligning their life with that purpose, becoming a full expression of themselves. So there's actually quite a clear direction rather than the journey that I ended up going on in exploring all of these different fields, but not really knowing what I was doing or what the outcome would be.
Would you say that the book then emanated from the website?
The website was always built with the intention of actually sharing that information with people via a free resource. And I did that successfully, and it was really well received. And I really noticed that even though so much of the information I share in the books is actually on the site, people literally needed it in a hard copy form, and it walked them through the steps step by steps.
Do you feel that you have made friends with paper, you know, with the written word?
Look, much, much more so. I will never be a creative writer and much more a procedure manual type person than probably always will be, but I can definitely express myself so much more easily.
Obviously, you're connecting with your audience.
Absolutely. And so it'll be interesting to see how the writing even evolves in the future.
Yes.
But it's certainly possible. And I guess that's what I, you know, would really love listeners to take away. You know, you can change almost anything in your life. It's just about having the right tools to shift that subconscious programming. Can fulfill all of your heart's desires. There's absolutely no question about that. I know in my heart that that's the truth.
The website's beautiful. It's beautifully articulated. People can go in there and they can, you know, segue off into all sorts of resources, what teachers, what resources they have, what books they have. Then you decided to write the guidebooks. What was then that second level of translation like?
People, when they explore the website, don't explore it necessarily sequentially. What I found was that certain people actually needed to be held by the hand a little bit more and given that instructional, like step by step. So the first workbook, which is Find Your Purpose, Change Your Life, identifying your purpose is massive. Like, it honestly, it is your GPS going forward in life.
Then you took that book and you've turned it into an audiobook.
So, I mean, the bulk of it is exactly the same, the messages and obviously the activities. There were just some elements that we needed to strip out, things like headings. We just didn't want it to sound like you were, you know, listening to a book being read. We just wanted to bring it alive a little bit more. It's so exciting to actually have it read. I've done the narration. I've had a beautiful woman by the name of Alice and Sarah take care of that for me. And I remember listening to back to the first track that she did, and it took me back. I just thought, oh my goodness. I wanted to listen to more, and I just was so shocked that I actually produced that.
Not a lot of writers have had that experience of listening to their work put into audio, and it does add another layer.
Absolutely. Even now, I love reading, and I've got, you know, a whole library of books. But what I actually do enjoy is that audio experience.
It's almost like it hits different parts of your brain.
So I'll actually often buy the book, and then I'll buy the audio track as well. And I'll listen to it while I'm reading the book. Yeah, it's a great experience.
Yeah. Let's get straight into your book. This is being read by Alice and Sarah. Find Your Purpose, Change Your Life. Thanks, Alice.
Before we get into the bones of this audio workbook, I'd like to share a little bit about why I created it. Not so long ago, I felt adrift and disenchanted by life, despite my perceived success. What I craved was a meaningful, deeply fulfilling, and joyous life. But it eluded me, regardless of how hard I tried. With so much information out there in the human potential and personal development sectors, as well as the psychology and self-help sections in bookstores, I found it difficult to determine what resources would lead to real and lasting change when seeking to improve my life circumstances. Fortunately, that paradigm is far behind me now. Oh, don't get me wrong, my life still has its challenges, and there are issues I continue to wrestle with, but my life now has direction and meaning. I also possess the tools and the self-confidence to deal with anything that crosses my path. Each day, my life is becoming richer, more colourful and joyous. You might be like I once was, trying one thing after another but not really knowing what you're looking for. By the time I'd reached my late 20s, I'd incorporated everything that I thought would make me happy into my life. A secure and lucrative career, dream house, classic car, busy social life, designer things and heaps of friends. I was supposed to feel happy and fulfilled, right? Except I wasn't. I felt hollow and deeply unhappy. Was there something wrong with me? So I followed my heart and set up a business based on my love for architecture and design. Soon afterwards, Prince Charming arrived on the scene. Fast forward 10 years. The fairy tale romance had ended and I'd closed my business. I was freshly divorced and now broke, both emotionally and financially. I felt like a complete failure. What now? Being a logical person, I went searching for what was missing. I changed career three more times. I spent thousands of dollars on books, seminars, workshops, and retreats. Yet I still felt lost and confused about what would truly make me happy. I hit rock bottom. After searching high and low for 16 years, I finally came across key people, or I could say the universe sent them, who helped me identify what was missing in my life. That is, a sense of purpose. These people and their work helped me to uncover my reason for living and encouraged me to live in alignment with that purpose. That's when my life started to change dramatically and quickly in my early 40s. Once I'd found and owned my purpose, I could think more clearly and my inner voice began to emerge. My life unfolded with more ease. My confidence and sense of fulfillment grew with every new step I took towards embodying my life purpose, my reason for living, my zone of genius, my life calling. I finally realized I didn't need to become someone else to step into my life's purpose. It's who I already was at my very core. This is also a central message of many great spiritual teachers. The journey of self-discovery will strip away who you are not, so that you are finally free to be your authentic self. This audio workbook is one of seven that I've created to help you successfully build a life you love. It's deeply fulfilling and provides you with a sense of purpose and, importantly, the freedom to fully express yourself in every area of your life. In other words, you get to create a joyous, meaningful, and fulfilling life in which you are free to be all of you. As a lifelong sufferer of anxiety and depression, I never thought it was possible to feel content and awed by life on a daily basis. My mother tells me that even as a tiny baby, I used to projectile vomit the moment I perceived any tension in the room. And for as long as I can remember, I was plagued with a deep sense of melancholy that rarely left me. However, that all started to change at 42, when I began actively working my way through the material and activities I've collated within this series of audio workbooks. Discovering your life purpose is the crucial first step to build a life you love. This audio offers you a clear-cut, direct path to knowing yourself and your purpose, saving you from the long and expensive trial and error route I took. Rather than delving deeply into the benefits of uncovering your life purpose, which is the focus of other books on this topic, my aim is to direct you to key information and get you working straight away, before you lose momentum. You can never know yourself too well. For instance, I rediscovered parts of myself I'd forgotten and uncovered interests and hobbies that I didn't even know I liked, let alone loved, plus new and preferred ways of doing things. I can certainly attribute my battle with depression to having no mission in life or reason for living. My bouts of melancholy and chronic depression lifted permanently once I began to live in alignment with who I truly am and embodied my life purpose. I am not a certified therapist or career counselor, nor do I consider myself a coach. I see my role more as a content curator for self-transformation. My intention is to point you in the direction of the resources, people, and tools that I believe can be truly effective in helping you, just as they helped me. This audio gives you everything you need to discover your life purpose. The methodologies presented are not based on theory and hope. They are proven methods and practical tools used by career advisors, psychologists, specialists in human behavior and human potential, and elite personal development coaches and mentors. Uncovering your life purpose and living in alignment with it is the most precious gift you can give yourself. It provides a reason for everything you do in life. It's the difference between you simply existing and living a meaningful, joyous, and fulfilling life.
And now to the critique part of our program. with Adam Norris. Welcome, Adam.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's been quite a while since I've been in the 2BBB after all of the COVID. I've been doing home recordings.
This is the right spot to let our listeners know that we're recording this interview from 2BBB in the beautiful town of Bellingen. But back to you, Adam. I heard your radio program here. You interview authors from all around the world called Quilling Me Softly. Great name. Tell me about some of the people that you've interviewed that stick out in your mind.
Two back-to-back Zoom interviews with, you know, significant figures. The blank Zoom was with Peter Carey, and that was a really wonderful conversation. But then the next one was with former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. It was a face-to-face. And just being able to look at somebody and see gesture. But Cornelia Funke, the German young adult author, was fantastic. Being able to talk to somebody who has such a rich knowledge of especially European folklore. And at the time of the conversation, I was staying over in Kallang in this very forested area, and it was quite late at night. There was rain, and I'd seen a barn owl earlier. So this is the perfect time to be talking to somebody about fairy tales and fictions. And
were you scared?
I can't say I was scared, but I was very conscious of, like, this is the start of the horror movie now.
Well, that obviously wasn't enough for you, but also this role that you took on, being the organiser for the Bellingen Writers Festival, which has grown every year and is getting a lot of traction in Sydney. What possessed you? The work involved must be enormous.
The festival's developed such a strong reputation, particularly among authors. A lot of authors talking, you know, to other writers that they know about it being, I guess, a bit more of an intimate festival, but still just as vibrant. And so this year, I mean, you know, I had the program more or less locked and ready to go. And then there were still these outstanding names who were like, oh, no, well, yes, the Bellingen Festival. We've heard about this. We'd love to be a part of it.
Because I noticed it was called the Readers and Writers Festival, not just a Writers
Festival. Yeah, it was decided long ago that it's not just a showcase of, all right, writers here, come and have your book launch, and we'll eat the canapés and we'll buy the book, and you can
experience.
The reading experience as well.
Now, Bellingen has got a reputation. It is a centre for alternative therapies, for alternative thinking, for alternative lifestyles. It's this type of writing that we're listening to of Kylie's.
It sounds like it's memoir self-help. What I liked about the way that Kylie was describing it, but also she spoke of herself in a curatorial sense.
I
thought that was a really interesting way of trying to write something which has practical benefits to somebody. It's not just this worked for me, here's a 1, 2, 3. It's like, no, there are all of these things that she's tried across many years and has been, with that wealth of knowledge, come by through adversity and a lot of expense and a lot of time, she's been able to assemble something which, I don't know, come in a bit of a master plan.
I'm sure you find in your interviews, as I do mine, that particularly writing in memoir style requires a lot of courage.
Absolutely. I think particularly so in Kylie's case, given that she mentions how strict her upbringing was, how demanding her father was, and how that perfectionism leading to striving to always be doing things perfectly. To come from that to trying to write down a set of key theme and instructions to help other people, I think is a huge leap of faith.
She started off saying, all I want to do is write a procedure manual. And then she goes in the opposite direction.
And I think that's a fundamental part of reading. I can appreciate the desire to be removed from the work. But I think one of the reasons that memoir is so compelling is that we know that there is a real person behind them, and we need to feel empathy. We need to feel that sense of connection. And I think this goes across memoir, nonfiction, fiction. We don't really feel the drive to keep reading, yet alone to really take on anything that's happening inside the covers of a book, unless there's something for us to resonate with. And so I think Kylie making that decision that there needs to be something more accessible there. I think it must take a lot of courage to put yourself in that position. Like, all right, I will lay myself bare here because there is a greater good.
There's a greater good. You know, I was thinking of that Shakespeare quote about greatness, you know, Some people are born with it, some people achieve it, and other people have it thrust upon them. With poor Kylie, you know, it was thrust upon her. She had to write. Basically, was driven by being in a deep depression. It's one of our modern illnesses, I think, and the fact that people can talk about it is very important.
As much as I would love to say that the stigma of depression is gone, I don't believe that's the case.
Is it surprising to you that memoir, that's really on the upsurge?
I think a lot of people read for the sense of escapism. But as you say, memoir is having such a resurgence. We look at these stories from other people not as voyeurs, but as a way of kind of working out the contours of our own lives.
Yes.
And seeing how we project ourselves into how we would respond. I think we look to these stories to see what is the grit and the substance of other people and how that does relate to ourselves.
Yeah.
William McInnes is one who quite eloquently about his own life. And Jess Hill, who won the 2020 Stella for Look What You Made Me Do, her domestic abuse, is a hugely important book, is looking for alternate ways of looking at the world.
In a word nerdy sort of way, I do want to talk about that translation of web content to book, to audiobook. Like, that's
a really interesting one. Having the website there and people can dive into it, I think that's wonderful, and I think that's what a lot of people are kind of accustomed to now with online activity, is it's not linear. Because Kylie had this great spread of insight that she was able to arrange, you know, wonderful platter on a table.
Yeah.
Whereas assembling that into a book is, instead of having the platter, suddenly you have a menu and you are...
Yeah, table service.
Yes, it is. It would have been a very interesting process of how long it took her to count what the form of the book was going to be.
And realizing the pain it took her to create that story to turn it into a book, because a book is a... You've written, right?
Yeah, I've written, and it's a huge undertaking, and it's very isolating.
You're on your own. It's you and the page.
Spoke as well briefly of being able to just craft this in the first place and how to write. And interestingly, she said that she's not at all a creative writer, or she can't imagine herself doing creative writing.
But isn't all writing creative
writing? Well, that's it. I think there still has to be that sense of creativity and exploration and intellect and play.
I saw that in her writing, because she was weaving it in and out, even though she was talking about something quite dire, and to make it playful. And to sort of go, okay, well, here I was, rock bottom.
Well, that's it. Everybody likes seeing the story where somebody bottoms out. Nobody likes it when that's where...
They stay.
The end. You know, it has to continue on. And I think that's why putting it into a story as opposed to a manual or a set of instructions as you first approached it, I think that's where it works well. And then, again, being able to translate that into an audio piece. I remember some of the best writing advice was... All right, here's your piece. You've written it. Mm. You've drafted it. Now go sit with it in a room and just read it out loud to you. And you'll hear if it's not working. And so being able to then spin that into something that people can listen to, audiobook, is a totally different kind of magic.
Because, I mean, all storytelling started off orally.
Oral, yeah. And that's, you know, the earliest entertainments we have. And well, not just entertainments, but of learning, way of kind of discovering ourselves and carrying on, living beyond our own life. The way we do that is through story.
Writing a book is a long journey. Podcast it or whatever.
Mm.
And you're getting immediate feedback, which you wouldn't get as a writer normally, because you are writing it, publishing it, getting it printed, and it's a year later. Before it even hits the shelves. And I think those days are rapidly coming to a close.
Mm.
Your final advice for Kylie?
I think from what we heard there that there's more creative writing to come. If she is at all interested, I would be saying, give the creative writing a spin, because that's another... really impactful way of reaching somebody.
And getting that message across that she's wanting to get across.
That's it.
Your last pitch for the festival.
There's some remarkable authors I'm so excited about. There's live music. It's going to be quite a festival. We mentioned Jess Hill earlier. She'll be in conversation with Barry Cassidy. There's so many things I want to see. I'm just not going to get the opportunity.
Because you'll be in it.
I'll be in it. I'll be that schmuck on stage.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck
with
the rest of the program. This is Maria Rosaris, and it was a pleasure to bring you this program. Produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH, I look forward to your company next time.